Welcome back to the Mellow Mama podcast, where I talk all things conscious living and conscious, respectful parenting with the help of lots of great books, resources, and of course, my own experience as a mom. If you're new here, what's up? I'm Caitlin, and today we're going to continue my mini book club series on Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes in this little series, please go check those out. It's a nice foundation to build upon. The book is so intentional and perfectly written, in my opinion, that it's great to start from where I started and talk about the ego, talk about the pain body, and we're going to talk a little bit more about both of those things today. But in this conversation, we're going to discuss chapter 6, Breaking Free from the Pain Body. So go check those out first, and if you're not going to, that's okay also. Just understand that the reason I wanted to discuss this book in particular on my podcast was because I feel like if you want to build these amazing, conscious, connected, authentic relationships with your children, with your spouse, your significant other, maybe even just yourself, like you want to show up in your true God-given essence. You want to rid yourself of all of the layers of identification and role-playing, and you just want to be present in your daily life. Understanding the things that take you out of that zone are really pivotal and honestly imperative if that's what your goal is. And when I talk about conscious parenting, a lot of the time it's built on this exact foundation of true presence, real authenticity. What is relationship? I always say, you know, this is not a job. This is a relationship. This is not an ownership dynamic. This is a relationship that we're building with our children. And if you want to operate there too, understanding these things is going to be so fruitful and beneficial in your daily life with your kids. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, how much peace have I been missing out on? How much presence, how much stillness, how much like lightheartedness, honestly. And I've talked in the past couple of episodes about how the more you get into the work of understanding your ego, understanding your pain body, building that awareness, the funnier it all becomes, the simpler the process becomes, and the closer and closer you get to achieving presence most of the time. Let's talk about what the pain body is for those of you that are just jumping in or if you need a refresher. The pain body is basically the accumulation of pain from your past. Everything, I imagine like a little snowball, just like the ego too. The ego is more the identifications, whereas the pain body is the emotional experience associated with the egoic attachments and identifications. This is what gets you all riled up and ruffled up and worked up throughout your day-to-day life. You know, the ego has this response of, that's a threat to my identity. That's a threat to my value as a person. What's happening in front of me, if I make it about me, is again threatening my importance as an individual, my value and worthiness for connection, for being seen, heard, and important. And then the pain body comes up and is like, yes, I'm going to live through you and experience this pain and work through you in ways that are uncharacteristic of you, that are just uncomfortable. Any of the tension, any of the fear-based behaviors that you might act on. If, you know, I help parents for a living, right? So if you are yelling, screaming, lashing out, hitting, getting into any sort of survival state, dysregulated emotional situation, that's the pain body. The pain body is responsible for that. And it's really going to cause tension, not just in your relationship with your children, but in the way that you show up in every area of your life, especially, again, your most intimate relationships where you feel subconsciously the most vulnerable. The good news is, though, that we can free ourselves from the pain body, just like we can free ourselves from the ego. And these things will stay. They'll be there in our subconscious. They'll be there as part of our human experience, our lived experience from infancy onward, but we can allow ourselves to build this sort of like barrier of awareness. Like, okay, it might still be there. The pain body might still be there, but it can get smaller. My ego might still be there, but if I'm aware of it, then it doesn't really have any power over me. And the same thing goes for the pain body. So in this episode, we're going to talk about what gets your ego and your pain body, especially, worked up and rearing to go? What are the things that trigger it and turn it on? Building that awareness. And if you've taken my course, if you've followed along for a long time, you know, like, that really is the key. Not just trying to fix and change your kids or fix and change your spouse, focusing on their behavior. What do they need to do differently? Turning it around and saying, okay, why am I bothered? What does this say about me? What does this interaction have to do with my ego, my attachments, my identifications, and the emotional response tied to those things, my pain body? How can I make it smaller? How can I build that awareness so that they happen less and less, those triggers? We're also going to talk about how we pass on the pain body and how the pain body shows up in children and affects our children in this episode. So, perfect one for my parent listeners out there, which I feel like is 98% of you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for being invested in this type of work. Whether or not you think this is something that you want to implement in your daily life, this practice of peace, awareness, stillness, presence, or even if you think this book might not align with you, I know a lot of people get scared away by the title and by the concept of something seeming new agey, but really this is just about getting back to who you are at the root, how God made you and how you are supposed to show up in your daily life, again, in that still present zone. So thank you so much for contributing to more peace for everybody. I think by one person, and I've said this in every episode, I think one person doing this work makes such a massive impact. It's going to affect the way your children interact with other people, your spouse. It's going to impact the way that the people they interact with others, and so on and so forth. And just is so powerful. And I'm so grateful to have this time with all of you. Eckhart Tolle says here on page 161, the beginning of freedom from the pain body lies first of all in the realization that you have a pain body. Then more importantly, in your ability to stay present enough, alert enough to notice the pain body in yourself as a heavy influx of negative emotion when it becomes active. When it is recognized, it can no longer pretend to be you and live and renew itself through you. I think one of the things that's going to really help you in your journey to this awareness, this recognition of the pain body in yourself and therefore the freedom from it, is seeing, like, okay, what are some examples of how the pain body shows up and what does it look like? And I think it can be pretty obvious, right? If we're in an emotionally uncomfortable state, that is the pain body, okay? And then understanding your egoic ties to it is another step forward. I love this empowering expression that states, we are actors in our lives, not reactors. I think that this is perfectly relevant. If you're somebody that's like, man, I want to start to really identify this. I want to start to see how it's showing up in my day-to-day life. How often is my pain body active? How often is it trying to take me over? And how often do I become that reactor and stop being the aware, present actor who has the power to say, pain body, not today. You can go back to your home now and start to develop some healthy emotional regulation tools. And interestingly enough, just as every single time we respond differently in a moment that our pain body shows up and tries to take over, we build that muscle for healthy emotional availability, healthy emotional regulation, and we model those things and pass them on, it becomes a practice, right? The same thing happens for our overall state of consciousness and state of presence. Every single time that the pain body comes to the surface, as Eckhart Tolle puts it, it becomes fuel for consciousness when we're aware of it. Every opportunity, it's almost like exciting when your pain body starts to show up. Instead of becoming identified with it, becoming wrapped up in it, when we're aware of it, it loses its power, it loses its grip, and brings us closer to an overall state of being more conscious, being more present. And in the same way, we can start to even be grateful for the pain body. Okay, interesting that you're showing up right here, right now. Interesting that I'm having this reaction, but I'm the actor in my life. I am the awareness of my emotional responses, my pain body. And the grip gets looser and looser every single time that we acknowledge the pain body in real time in this way. So if you've ever felt bad about the fact that you are highly reactive or that you have a really heavy pain body once you start to acknowledge it, don't. In fact, he says at some point, I think it might have been in the previous chapter even, that oftentimes the people with the biggest pain bodies have the best opportunity for enlightenment, for growing into a conscious person, because you get extra opportunities to practice. I'm not sure if any of you have heard that quote that says, "Are you funny or did you have a perfect childhood?" And I think that this is so relevant to the discussion around how great it is sometimes to have adversity and struggle and pain that you've experienced and endured in your life, if you want to look at it as fuel for consciousness, if you want to look at it as what can I endure to move forward and to have constant growth in my life in terms of spiritual growth and other types of growth as well. But one thing that I really love from Tony Robbins, and I refer to him all the time, is the concept of not being able to do anything that is uncomfortable or unfamiliar until whatever you want is less scary than your current circumstance. And Eckhart Tolle sort of mentions a similar concept. He says, when you can't stand the endless cycle of suffering anymore, you begin to awaken. And I think that's really true. It's only when we are like, what is happening? This insanity, this madness of staying in this cycle of negativity and miserableness. Misery is the word. So once we are like, okay, I can't stand being uncomfortable all the time and miserable and sad and feeling frustrated and defeated, whatever, that's when we're like, what can I change? What do I need to do? And of course, some people stay in this state until the day they die. And that, obviously, I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, that's not going to be you, because you're making this effort. Like, okay, I want something different. And you might be at that breaking point of, I have so much pain and so much discomfort and so much frustration in my relationships, in my day-to-day life. Like, I just can't take it anymore. Well, that's great news. You might be like, what in the world are you talking about? But it's great news to be at that tipping point, because that is where awareness happens. That's where change can happen. That's where you become the actor and not the reactor. And what an empowered place to be. Let's talk about presence. Eckhart Tolle's main, like, OG concept, you know, a lot of people refer to his book, The Power of Now. And I'm always like, you can't read The Power of Now if you haven't read A New Earth, because it's just, I feel like the ego and the pain body are what take you out of the now. And without understanding those things, it's very hard to implement what you learn, even though it's wonderful, from that other work. He mentions that a woman came to see him. He tells this story about how she comes in and she starts to talk, and she starts to sob, actually, uncontrollably. And she talks about how she's feeling, and there was a lot of anger and sadness and all this abuse that she endured as a child. And he says, I saw quickly that her pain was not caused by her present life circumstances, but by an extraordinarily heavy pain body. Her pain body had become the filter through which she viewed her life situation. She is not able yet to see the link between the emotional pain and her thoughts, being completely identified with both. She could not yet see that she was feeding the pain body with her thoughts. In other words, she lived with the burden of a deeply unhappy self. At some level, however, she must have realized that her pain originated within herself, that she was a burden to herself. She was ready to awaken, and this is why she had come. And he has her, and this is a really important part of the discussion today. He has her acknowledge what she's actually feeling inside of her body and to sense the emotion directly instead of through the filter of the unhappy thoughts, the story that she's telling. And before I continue, I want you to start noticing, what story do I tell myself? What story am I telling myself over and over again about my life, about my marriage, about my kids? Is this the filter that is going to bless your life, that's going to bring so much joy and fulfillment and presence into your life? Or is it the pain body just feeding on more and more pain, looking for more pain through your story, the painful thoughts that you're feeding it? be empowered and say no. Nuh-uh. So anyway, so Eckhart's like, hey, notice what you're feeling inside of your body. And she's like, Eckhart, I came to you thinking you're going to like lead me out of the pain, not directly into it. What is happening right now? And reluctantly, she does what he asked her to do. And it says, tears rolling down her face, her whole body shaking. At this moment, this is what you feel, I said. There is nothing you can do about the fact that at this moment, this is what you feel. Now, instead of wanting this moment to be different from the way it is, which adds more pain to the pain that is already there, is it possible for you to completely accept that this is what you feel right now? Suddenly, she looked impatient as if she was about to get up and said angrily, no, I don't want to accept this. Who is speaking? I asked her. You or the unhappiness in you? Can you see that your unhappiness about being unhappy is just another layer of unhappiness? I'm not asking you to do anything. All I'm asking is that you find out whether it is possible for you to allow those feelings to be there. In other words, and this may sound strange, if you don't mind being unhappy, what happens to the unhappiness? Don't you want to find out? And after a minute or so of sitting silently, he noticed a significant shift in her energy field. And she said, this is weird. I'm still unhappy, but now there's space around it. It seems to matter less. And that was the first time I had heard anybody put something like that. There's space around the unhappiness. That space, of course, comes when there is inner acceptance of whatever you're experiencing in the present moment. I think we can all take a minute to evaluate some unhappy story that we're telling ourselves, some sadness or loneliness or frustration, discouragement, any uncomfortable feeling. And if we let ourselves just feel it and acknowledge that it's there, I really think you can experience that sort of space around it. And it's a different feeling than if you were to like suppress the feeling or push it away or invalidate it to yourself. Like, oh, that's just, it's not helping. Just be positive. Or, oh, it's just like so dramatic. There are people that have it way worse. Or this is just so like, you know, such a silly thing to be upset about. Like, it's not invalidating it. It's just accepting it. I feel like that right now. And if you haven't read Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg, I'm actually working on an amazing course addition to my online parenting and reparenting course that is going to help people actually implement those amazing communication skills. But if you haven't read that, and you should, first of all, I'm not a big person for shoulding on people, but I really highly recommend it. I think it allows you to take this to the next level, which is why I'm putting it into my course. But he includes a list of feelings. And I'm going to actually read some of them to you and a little bit about what he mentions so that you can take this work from Eckhart Tolle that we're talking about today. And then again, move forward and actually apply in your daily life what it looks like to repair and to stop operating as like the pain body. As I don't know if anybody watched SpongeBob, but like how he's like in, I think he's like in Mr. Krabs' mind, like controlling his body. I imagine that's what the pain body's doing. And I'm so sorry yet again if that's a reference that you're like, what in the world are you even talking about? But anyway, here's what Marshall Rosenberg says about feelings versus non-feelings. He says, a common confusion generated by the English language is our use of the word feel without actually expressing a feeling. For example, in the sentence, I feel I didn't get a fair deal, the words I feel could be more accurately replaced with I think. In general, feelings are not being clearly expressed when the word feel is followed by words like that, like as if, I feel that you should know better. I feel like a failure. I feel as if I'm living with a wall. You need to distinguish feelings from thoughts. Also, pronouns, I feel I am constantly on call. I feel it is useless. Names or nouns referring to people, I feel Amy has been pretty responsible. I feel my boss is being manipulative. Conversely, in the English language, it is not necessary to use the word feel at all when we are actually expressing a feeling. We can say, I'm feeling irritated, or simply, I'm irritated. Distinguish between what we feel and what we think we are. In NVC, nonviolent communication, we distinguish between words that express actual feelings and those that describe what we think we are. So, I feel inadequate as a guitar player. In this statement, I'm assessing my ability as a guitar player rather than clearly expressing my feelings. Are you guys catching on to why I'm talking about this? Okay. So, a better way to express actual feelings in this case would be, I feel disappointed in myself as a guitar player. I feel impatient with myself as a guitar player. I feel frustrated. The actual feeling behind my assessment of myself as inadequate could therefore be disappointment, impatience, frustration, or some other emotion. And it's important to distinguish between what we feel and how we think others react or behave toward us. This one is so easy to slip into, especially when the ego and pain body are at work. I feel unimportant to the people with whom I work. That's a victim story. That's the ego trying to identify this sense of self-importance and how this expectation of how other people need to treat me because I'm me. The word unimportant describes how I think others are evaluating me rather than an actual feeling, which in this situation might be, I feel sad. I feel discouraged. I feel misunderstood. This is another example. Here, the word misunderstood indicates my assessment of the other person's level of understanding rather than an actual feeling. In this situation, I may be feeling anxious or annoyed or some other emotion. Anytime we use a word that is assessing how we interpret other people and not how we feel, we're moving away from connection. We're moving away from actually being understood, actually expressing ourselves vulnerably and
effectively.
Here are some examples of words like that. I feel abandoned, abused. I feel distrusted. I feel betrayed. I feel attacked. I feel cornered, diminished, put down, rejected, taken for granted, threatened. This can be really tricky, right? Because you're like, okay, then what the heck am I supposed to say? That is what I'm feeling. Well, what is a feeling? Think of emotion words. And here's a list, and I'll just list some for you to think of in these times, you know, moving forward. Amused, amazed, astonished. You might feel dull, edgy, embarrassed, displeased, discouraged, depressed, dejected, tranquil, intrigued. You might feel intense, irate, irritated, resentful, lonely, uncomfortable, weary. You get the gist, okay? And there are so many wonderful exercises in that book, but I wanted to bring them to the surface because sometimes we tell an unhappy story not just to ourselves, but to the people in our lives. And we just keep on telling it because the pain body lives for the drama, lives for the pain. And the second that we start to identify what we're actually feeling and we sit with it, we let it be there, the acceptance creates what that woman described, that sort of space around the uncomfortable feeling. It's not going away, but it's more comfortable to experience it. And as Eckhart puts it, since you cannot be unhappy without an unhappy story, this was the end of her unhappiness. It was also the beginning of the end of her pain body. Emotion in itself is not unhappiness. Only emotion plus an unhappy story is unhappiness. So ask yourself, what story am I telling on a day-to-day basis? And how can I adjust it? And also, am I accurately identifying my feelings? Or is it another story? You know, I wanted to emphasize the nonviolent communication piece because I think sometimes we might think we're identifying how we're feeling, but we're still telling the unhappy story. Or in fact, we're adding layers to the unhappy story when we start to make assessments of how other people should be doing certain things and how they should be showing up in a certain way. And that's a story. That's the ego. And that doesn't make it any easier. Acknowledging this stuff, building that awareness, developing these new habits is a practice, a daily practice that I'm doing with all of you listening. And it truly does lead to that presence, that, you know, real engaged, authentic relationship building and so much fun and lightheartedness and fulfillment on a deeper level. And what it also does, and I think that people need to hear is allow for us to experience the ebbs and flows of the human experience, as opposed to numb them out, dull the pain, ignore what's happening. You might have, you know, I know people personally that are really big on like, you can't ignore your responsibilities. You can't put things off, but they will ignore the pain. They will dull and numb the pain, not acknowledge what's creating feelings of anxiety, what's creating feelings of depression. What can they do to really assess the root cause of the pain? Doing the much more uncomfortable work associated with that, as opposed to numbing out, dulling, and distracting. This is a very common concept in today's modern world. A lot of people profit greatly off of, whether it be the entertainment industry, the drug industry, alcohol, sweets, bad foods, right? Like, there's so many ways that people today ignore, distract, numb the pain. But the thing is, the pain is still there. And every person utilizing whatever tool that they're using to ignore the pain, it's still there. Just like when you treat a cold, you might get rid of the cold symptoms, but the cold is still there working in the body. There's a reason for it. The same thing goes for any discomfort. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, but that is so scary. You might have lived in a state of denial for such a long time due to your inner child's need for survival, safety, security, and protection of your heart and your sense of self-esteem and self-worth. It might feel like right now that's easier than acknowledging the pain and acknowledging the fact that you've been in pain, that you have all of this pain stored up and it's stacked on top of it, you know, like years and years of like boxes of pain in this little inventory, right? And I understand that feeling, and I know that sometimes it can feel easier almost, like, okay, if I just numb out, or if I just distract myself, or disassociate, or numb myself in whatever capacity, then it will go away. But it just continues to compound and nag at you. And the reason is your existence, your very like light, little spark, that's your soul, wants to be free from all of that, wants to be free from all the layers of pretending, of role-playing. It wants to be free and like operate in this world authentically and in peace, true presence. So that stuff is not going to like just disappear and evaporate, especially the longer you put it off, the longer you numb yourself in whatever capacity. All of the numbing just creates more pain, more long-term discomfort, especially in your relationships. So it might feel like the easier way out, but especially in the long term, it creates so much more discomfort. And you, by acknowledging the pain, by acknowledging it, like how she mentioned, it felt like there was a space around it when she accepted that that's the experience. We let go of all the other things that we might have fear around in terms of our pain. You might feel like, well, if I acknowledge the pain, then that might lead to me feeling resentment toward this person or this parent because that's where the pain was initiated. That's where it started in me. And that's where it was like, you know, the building of the pain. It's where it all accumulated, my pain body in my childhood. Well, you can, when you accept it, all of a sudden, it creates this opportunity for compassion. In that space, that little bubble around the pain, in that space of acceptance and awareness, we truly start to acknowledge like the humanness in any person or any circumstance that we've experienced, and we are no longer in storytelling mode. And if we can get to that place of no longer, no, not just going on a rampage of why this shouldn't have happened, why this shouldn't have been done this way, or why me, why. And you guys, I to operate there all the time. I get into my head about certain aspects of my life where I start to wish things could be different, or wish things could have gone differently, wish I would have made a different choice, right? And it has never served me to operate in that unhappy storytelling mode. But what has served me is to accept what is the present moment. And when you do that, when you turn off storytelling mode, you don't just turn off storytelling mode from the past, which is often depression, right? Like leading to the feelings of depression. But we turn off storytelling mode for the future also, which people often in the therapy world refer to as anxiety. Whether we're telling an old story or we're telling a new story, either one is not here and now. It's not in the present. We don't need to catastrophize and plot out what we think is going to happen in order to make ourselves feel more secure. When we get out of storytelling mode, we can truly be present. Sit with how we feel. Experience how we feel, even if it's uncomfortable. Even if it takes a minute. And we don't have to, not everything has to be this black and white beginning and end solution. There's polarity in life as a human. We can experience all the things. I know if you're a mom listening, I'm speaking from the point of view of a mama. There, I know you've experienced this. Unless, I don't even know. Maybe not. Maybe there's a small percentage, but I'm going to just go out on a limb here and assume that the average mother knows what I mean when I say there is big time polarity and shared experience of feelings. You can feel over the moon, in love with your children, in love with motherhood, so passionate about your home, your spouse, you're just, oh my gosh, like I love being a mom. And you can also feel like, gosh, it is so hard to get my needs met. Gosh, some days I wish it was more convenient. Gosh, some days I wish I was more visible. Gosh, I wish I was acknowledged more. Gosh, if only I had the freedom to do that or go there. And both can exist at the same time. You can experience feeling like the most extreme joy and gratitude to the point, like sometimes, you know, I'm kissing my kids to sleep, like I'll like have like a dramatic tear in my eye. Like they're just, I'm like, thank you, God. My beautiful children, like so healthy and safe and here. And I get to have these moments with them. Like I just, thank you, God. Like I am overwhelmed with gratitude. And in the same hour, I can feel like, oh my gosh, like I got nothing done today that I wanted to get done on my to-do list. I didn't do anything but be with my sweet babies, be with my children and take care of them and feed them. And, you know, it's so crazy even to say that out loud. Like, I didn't do anything and we did a million things. But that's what it's like, you know, being a mama, I feel like I can understand very clearly, personally, that you can experience more than one feeling at a time. And I think having that awareness helps people, especially that struggle with this. Like, oh, it's so uncomfortable to feel anything but the surface level. I'm good. It's all good. I am good. Well, you can be good. You can be good and also acknowledge any sort of uncomfortable feelings that are below the surface that you've been putting off, ignoring, and disassociating and distracting yourself from. So get excited if you can, or just feel empowered, I guess is the better word that I've been using a lot this episode, around the discomfort that you need to accept that's in your body, that's in your experience, and then it will inevitably loosen its grip on you. It'll no longer be able to live through you. And also you can then get a better awareness and handle on your thoughts and the narrative that you spin around in your mind all day long. You can start to rewrite the story and be, again, the actor in your life as opposed to the reactor. Now I want to move on to the conversation of the pain body in children. And Eckhart Tolle emphasizes some of the telltale signs of an active pain body in a child, but if you are a parent, or if you're somebody that's ever gone to the grocery store or Disney World, you've seen kids dropping like flies, laying on the floor screaming. You know, it's not hard to identify the pain body in our very expressive vulnerable children, it is pretty apparent, especially if you operate in the ownership behaviorist dynamic that, you know, is rooted in control and this deception, this lie that you can control another human being, get them to behave a certain way 100% of the time. And also, just in case you're new here and you're like, yeah, but you can, you totally can use external factors to get your kids to be a certain way and to behave a certain way. Yes, as long as they're afraid of you or afraid that you don't love them, that can work short term, but you can't make them be happy and operate from an intrinsic place. That's a whole different conversation and really like the foundation of everything that we teach in the material that I share. That being said, though, it's not hard to identify the pain body, so I don't think we need to go over that. I think one of the things I wanted to emphasize here is that as conscious parents, our main goal is always modeling. It's about the parent more than it is about the child. When we implement these things, when we develop this heightened awareness, when we become actors and not reactors, when we start to respond to our children in a way that is conscious, when we just don't even necessarily respond to our children, but respond to life in a way that's conscious, when we're present, when we're able to identify, oh, there's the ego. Huh, interesting. Okay, there's my pain body. Let me pull out my emotional regulation toolbox. That is what our children are really learning directly from. And now, Eckhart Tolle mentions like our energy field, basically, like what we're emanating all the time, and that we can't hide that from our kids. And that's very true. And I think that one of the things that I emphasize a lot is authenticity with our children. I love Magda Gerber's work. So the woman that is responsible for RIE, Resources for Infant Educators, or Respectful Parenting. And she mentions this a lot in her books too. Like, our children just crave authenticity from us. They don't need us to pretend with them and really like be, I don't know, almost like condescending in the way that we think they need us to operate in baby mode with them. They want us to bring them to reality with us. And I like that he puts it as, the child may already have taken on pain from his or her parents' pain bodies. And so the parents may see in the child a reflection of what is also in them. Highly sensitive children are particularly affected by their parents' pain bodies. Having to witness parents' insane drama becomes almost unbearable emotional pain. And so it is often these sensitive children who grow into adults with heavy pain bodies. Children are not fooled by parents who try to hide their pain bodies from them, who say to each other, "We mustn't fight in front of the children." This usually means while the parents make polite conversation, the home is pervaded with negative energy. Suppressed pain bodies are extremely toxic, even more so than openly active ones, and that psychic toxicity is absorbed by the children and contributes to the development of their own pain body. Now, I want to go back because I mentioned the fact that conscious parenting is way more about the parent than it is about the child, because everything starts and ends with us. And he mentioned that children are like a mirror to us, especially in terms of the pain body. It says the parents may see in the child a reflection of what is also in them. And oftentimes that is what we are reacting to, because we, our inner child, so clearly and crispy remembers exactly the words of our own inner critical parent, of our parents and caregivers, and the shame that was bestowed upon us, all the layers of what we're supposed to be and what we need to be. And it's like we're, as parents, you know, I love that our children really can be looked at as these little mini life coaches, this amazing opportunity for awakening, especially when we notice, okay, what I'm reacting to is something that I fear is also in me on a deeper subconscious level. What I'm responding to is something that is totally in me or was in me as a child and was sort of like ripped out of me with shame and criticism and other fear-based tactics that my parents used in order to get me to be more in the image of what they were told is lovable, what they were told is valuable, worthy of connection. You don't have to operate there any longer. And when we, again, look at it, that's why I love this book so much, because some people think of it and like they're scared of reading this, like this material is out to get them or trying to call you out. No, it's trying to call you up, like trying to empower you get you excited about what's possible for your relationships, the level of connection that is potentially there. It's a beautiful gift. And I love the next piece where he talked about how kids are not fooled. I mean, every single person listening to this knows that you figure out your parents and you figure them out at a very young age. I would say 5 or 6 years old, I had figured out my mom and dad, their relationship dynamic, both parents, and like what was going on with them under the surface or above the surface. And that concern, or that, I guess, discernment grew and grew over the years. I mean, children doesn't have to start earlier. I was definitely that sensitive child that ended up having a pretty big pain body, and was very much like, I guess, a sponge to my parents, any of their outward or inward toxicity. I think that it's a very important reminder for any of you listening that are like, it's fine, like I'm living with discomfort, or I'm feeling lonely, or I'm feeling frustrated on a deep level, but I'll keep the household peaceful, you know, I'll do my best. It is felt energetically throughout your household, whether you like to acknowledge it or not. And so doing, again, the hard work and understanding that whether it's easy to acknowledge or comfortable to acknowledge or not, the act of not doing something about it and just simply sweeping things under the rug is just as painful to your children as having things out in the open. Not saying you need to just like have full-blown discussions and discourse and arguments or whatever in front of your children, but it's important to acknowledge that they sort of are one and the same to a certain degree in terms of what your children perceive and pick up on. In fact, it might even be, you know, a further statement could be that when our children see us not working on things, not having healthy resolution, not having real discussion, or at least knowing that we have this repair of any ruptures that are going on, or at least, you know, effort, that they begin to normalize that as well. And they know in their body, because we all know on a subconscious level what's comfortable and what's uncomfortable and what's healthy and what's not healthy, but it might be normalized, right? And so you might go into the world as an adult person seeking out similar type of relationship and normalizing the same sort of discomfort and misery in their own marriages moving forward, or any type of relationship dynamics, because that's what's been normalized for them. Eckhart also mentions that parents often wonder how to deal with their child's pain body. This might be you. You might be like, okay, how do I deal with my kid flailing on the ground because we can't have ice cream at 8 in the morning? Or how do I get my kid under control when we need to leave the park, or we need to leave story time, or I just need them to work with me at bedtime or brushing teeth? I get asked these questions daily, all sort of questions similar to this in my inbox. How do I deal with my kid freaking out in some capacity, having a hard time, as I phrase it? And he says the primary question is, of course, are they dealing with their own pain body? Do they recognize it within themselves? Are they able to stay present enough when it becomes activated so that they can be aware of the emotion on the feeling level before it gets a chance to turn into thinking and thus into an unhappy person? While the child is having a pain body attack, it sounds so crazy, there isn't much you can do except to stay present so that you are not drawn into an emotional reaction. I always say you cannot join the chaos in order to make the chaos go away. You have to be the calm confidence, the presence that allows the emotional experience to come and go like a little storm on the sea. The child's pain body would only feed on your emotional reaction. And haven't we all been there, right? When you're starting to respond in a way that is rooted in behaviorism, that is wanting this fear-based control. I need to get you to do like what I'm saying because I said so. Because, again, the subconscious root of that is because I am your mom or I'm your dad. I am in control here. You're not going to disrespect me. The ego is so big and loud in these moments, even if we are being just warmly authoritarian and manipulative. The ego is so present, and the pain body is truly taking over us once we again start to act in a way that's completely dysregulated and out there, off the charts in terms of like hitting, spanking, screaming, yelling, jerking our kids around. The pain body is in control. Little Plankton has got his thingies, and it's like maneuvering your body at that point. That's the pain body's living through you. And isn't it true though that our children absolutely just get more intense in terms of their behavior? Their pain body gets more activated. Why? Because it's feeding on the pain, and the pain, not just your pain and your pain body, how it's showing up and going on in their life, but the pain of experiencing this kind of hurt from you as the parent. It's just snowballing. It says, don't buy into the drama. Don't take it too seriously. If the pain body was triggered by thwarted wanting, don't give in to the demands. Okay? This is a recipe for dysfunction in later life. How beautiful of a notion is this? To just not give in to the drama. Stop taking it personally. Not taking it too seriously. I love the little, what is it? You know, Q-tip. I forget. Is that an acronym? Q-tip. Quit taking it personally. Stop taking your child's pain body so seriously. Stop. Like, you're just gonna feed it. What we need is playfulness. What we need is connection. What we need is curiosity, compassion. I felt that way. Your pain body might have attacked you and taken over you in the same hour. And it's likely that it did in the same day, because our kids, again, are a mirror of us. So asking those really important questions before we say, how can I handle my child's pain body? Well, are you dealing with your own? What does that look like for you? What kind of tools do you have in place? What's your mindset like? Are you taking this like so seriously when really it is just like your kid needs a banana? When your kid just needs a nap? Or could you spare yourself the drama? Could you spare yourself this emotional turmoil and pain and storytelling of, oh my gosh, like my kid is bad, my kid's a brat, my kid is going to be spoiled, my kid is going to be entitled, I'm a bad parent, everybody's going to think that I just let my kid walk all over me. All the stories that you might be telling yourself. Can you turn them off? Can you just be present and get into a lighthearted zone? I'll never forget the first time I saw my husband do this with Donovan, my son. I will never forget it. I was like, wow. It's one thing, you feel like a superhero when you do this in your own experience as a parent, in my personal opinion. Like, when you're able to really be that calm, confident anchor in the storm that your child's experiencing, and even take it a step further and be like playful, almost like, oh my gosh, what is it? You know, it's so crazy to be human, isn't it? All the experiences that we have, all the feelings that we experience. Oh my gosh. And like, this is so like, my child is so sleepy, or they are so hungry, or man, they are so overstimulated, or gosh, even like a deeper, not less lighthearted, but like this deep compassion of like, we have been going through so much lately and it is showing up today. And thank goodness I have this perspective. Thank goodness I have this mindset. I know I feel amazing when I am operating there, when my child is having a hard time and I'm not judging them, criticizing them, shaming them, trying to fix them, or that, you know, just change them, or like using the behavior as some sort of descriptor for their character. I don't confuse the two and I don't take it too seriously. I simply think about, okay, what would make sense? Like, why would this behavior be showing up? In my course, I talk about the fact that behavior is a communicator. It's communication of what's all the other things going on in your child. And sometimes it really just is that simple, that they need a snack, okay? Or they need to rest, or they need some time for peace and quiet. We just live in such an overstimulating world right now. And also, sometimes it is just a blatant reflection of you and your pain body and the way that you are showing up time and time again. But a little quick example, if your child ever says, like, go away. I know my son Donovan said this. There was like a phase. I think he was probably like 2 years old. And a little bit over two, and he'd say, "Go away, go away." And anytime he would do that, I'd say, "I'm not going away. I'm not going away. I'm never going away. Even when you want me to go away and you're 25, I'm not going away." And I would wrap him up and hug him and kiss him and get into this playful state. And it's so amazing. Every single time I would notice how the pain body would just disappear. Pain body would just vanish into thin air. It's gone. And he would get into a playful state. I often mention how our children are often testing us, looking for reassurance that anything they would do would, you know, might stop us from loving them. It's like a safety coping mechanism, like, will you still love me if? Will you still love me when I'm having a hard time? Especially if you have previously operated in a behaviorist way with your children, they will test you. They will see the boundaries for your love, especially, I mean, too, if you're also operating from a place of unconditional love, they'll still test you, like my son, you know. I've practiced this parenting style from the time he was in my belly, and he still needed to test, needed to also just having a hard moment, you know. Sometimes we just do that. But the best thing is when you pass the test and you're like, no, like nothing is going to change how much I love you. Are you crazy? Get over here. Let me hug you. And also, how good does it feel? Even I'm assuming for some of you, even just listening to that example, it's like, wow, what a good feeling. That amazing, confident, calm, playful presence is just unmatched. So asking our kids questions in the moment is the next conversation piece here in Eckhart Tolle's work. And I always say, like, that is the most insane expectation. When our child is in fight or flight mode, it is not the time for conversation. We can absolutely have calm, confident boundaries. Oh, like, you can't hurt other people. You can't hit me. You can't, whatever. I'm going to keep myself safe, or I'm going to keep baby brother safe. But to have like a full-on discourse and discussion around what's appropriate behavior and what's not is just simply going to go literally, maybe not even in one ear and out the other. It might just go like fly right over the head, because our body is not in a state of learning. Our brain is not in that, like, okay, I'm open, I'm still, I'm ready for new information. It's in survival mode. So we can't have that expectation for our children. But he does talk about asking questions after it's subsided, even perhaps the next day, and starting to tell the child about the pain body. He says, what was it that came over you yesterday when you wouldn't stop screaming? Or do you remember what it felt like? Was it a good feeling? No, if it had a name, what would it be called? If you could see it, what would it look like? And I remember actually doing this with my son. And interestingly enough, you know, I feel conflicted in some ways, because I do think that acknowledging it in this way can sometimes lead parents down the road of shame, like it's a bad thing, or also like, again, a control thing. Like in the moment, again, that the pain body shows up, having the urge to say, like, see, there it is again, it's showing up, like, better shut that up right now, better turn that off. And I don't want parents operating there with that expectation. I think that it's, again, going to get you into this place of a control mindset. I think that it's also going to get you into a pretty big spot of disappointment when you realize that you cannot control your child. And that might lead you to get into your own ego and pain body and have a pain body attack of your own, where you respond out of fear. And, you know, like, it's just a terrible vicious cycle. So if you are going to do this, start to introduce the concept to your child, if they're, let's say, like, three and a half to, you know, four, that's probably when I started this conversation with my son personally. Do it just so that they can start to build this awareness, not so that you can have some sort of like grip over their pain body. It will definitely help them to start identifying it, and you as well, especially if you also, like I've mentioned a couple times in this episode, want to start to notice patterns in the pain body. Like, how often does it show up, and when, and is there a routine time that you see the pain body come creeping up into the body? Because our, you know, from just a scientific standpoint, our children's prefrontal cortex is not fully developed in order to like withstand certain levels of stress and express themselves in an articulated way when they're in fight or flight. Like it just can't. So again, I just don't want you to have that expectation or slip into that mindset of I need to control, I need to nip this in the bud, I need to fix, as opposed to, okay, we're building awareness, we're building gradual awareness, and really, again, focusing on your own pain body and how you're addressing that. And he says here, an attitude be one of interest or curiosity rather than one of criticism or condemnation. And that really is my MO, man. Curiosity is the key to conscious parenting. We can move on now to triggers, because we are often triggered by our child's behavior because of all of the conditioned thoughts and statements, the inner critical parent, our own inner child or inner teenager or inner 20-year-old that is coming to the surface when we see certain things and we think it's going to have an effect on our value, how we are perceived, even if it is only by ourselves. And also like maybe how our children are going to be perceived, even if it's just by us with those conditioned thought patterns and the inner critical voice in our mind. Some pain bodies, he says, react to only one particular kind of trigger or situation, which is usually one that resonates with a certain kind of emotional pain suffered in the past. For example, if a child grows up with parents for whom financial issues are the source of frequent drama and conflict, he or she may also absorb the parent's fear around money and develop a pain body that is triggered whenever financial issues are involved. The child, as an adult, gets upset or angry even over insignificant amounts of money. Behind the upset or anger lies issues of survival and intense fear. Someone who is in childhood was neglected or abandoned by one or both parents will likely develop a pain body that becomes triggered in any situation that resonates even remotely with their primordial pain of abandonment, a friend arriving a few minutes late to pick them up at the airport, or a spouse coming home late can trigger a major pain body attack. If their partner or spouse leaves them or passes away, the emotional pain they experience goes far beyond the pain that is natural in such a situation. It may be intense anguish, long-lasting, incapacitating depression, or obsessive anger. And I know that, you know, again, this is so interesting reading this and then thinking and reflecting on my online course and the reparenting aspects of my online course. But we do discuss these things and kind of bring them to the surface so that you can, again, develop that high-end, deeper awareness in your everyday life. It is so interesting, though, isn't it, to think, oh my gosh, that's why I'm so triggered by somebody being 5 minutes late, or somebody that takes a little bit longer to get ready in the morning. You might feel like a deep sense of resentment and frustration, not even realizing that this is just a conditioned experience from your own childhood, where if somebody was taking a little bit longer or somebody was running behind, there might have been shame and criticism or drama, tension, conflict in your household growing up. The same thing could go the opposite direction. It could be that, you know, your family was always running late, you were always late for things, and it was another source of shame and discomfort for you. And so it might be triggering in the opposite way as an adult person. But it's so interesting to see how these little tiny things can show up in very big ways in the way that we react and respond and how our pain body shows up. He says, a woman who in childhood was physically abused may find that her pain body becomes easily activated in any close relationship with a man. Alternatively, the emotion that makes up her pain body may draw her to a man whose pain body is similar to that of her father who abused her. Her pain body may feel a magnetic pull to someone who it senses will give it more of the same pain. That pain is sometimes misinterpreted as falling in love. And if you haven't read Harville Hendrick's book, Getting the Love You Want, I highly recommend that book that he and his wife wrote together, and it is really just going in depth into that very concept of the fact that we do seek out a partner that closely mirrors the relationships that we experience in childhood from our caregivers, and oftentimes we choose the person that is going to sort of, in our minds, repair the damage done, repair the pain. We'll choose a partner exactly like the parent that we could never be enough for. And so we think subconsciously, okay, now I can meet that quota, right? Like I can fill that void because this person is just like my parent and they'll love me. And then of course, we just experience that pain over and over and over again, trying so desperately to accomplish that, being enough, being lovable, being worthy by somebody who, again, is exactly like the person that couldn't offer that to us in our childhood experience. This often is mirrored as well in the anxious attachment, avoidant attachment dynamic that people find themselves in so often. So read that book, Getting the Love You Want. But again, that is another example of triggers. And he says, when you recognize your own pain body as it arises, you will also quickly learn what the most common triggers are that activate it. Whether it be situations or certain things other people do or say, when those triggers occur, you will immediately see them for what they are and enter a heightened state of alertness. Within a second or two, you will also notice the emotional reaction that is the arising pain body. But in that state of alert presence, you won't identify with it, which means the pain body cannot take you over and become the voice in your head. If you are with your partner at the time, you may tell him or her, what you just said or did triggered my pain body. Have an agreement with your partner that whenever either of you says or does something that triggers the other person's pain body, you will immediately mention it. In this way, the pain body can no longer renew itself through drama in the relationship, and instead of pulling you into unconsciousness, it will help you become fully present. And you might notice, I think, first of all, that that's a wonderful idea, even if it could. I think you've got to have like a general understanding on both ends. Otherwise, it could create more drama and whatever, resentment and conflict. Like, what do you mean I cause it? Then, yeah, whatever, defensiveness, passive aggression. We don't want to be there. So I would, I think that it's nice that once you are able to be in this state of heightened awareness, that it would be harder to get into that reactive state even after telling your partner that, okay, this is, because it's almost like an epiphany, like an aha moment, like, hey, okay, that right there, that's a trigger for me. That apparently puts me into my survival mind, that turns on my pain body. So what can we do about that? And that's where that book, Nonviolent Communication, that I mentioned will really, really come in handy. That'll help you to actually express what you really need, what you're actually feeling, what you really need, and just move forward with that. You can express how you're feeling and try to start to identify, okay, that comes from something in my childhood. That comes from something in my adolescent experience. Or that comes from something somewhere in this shadowy part of me. But I'm aware of it now. That is something that we can work on together. That is where like the beauty happens. Again, that little aha moment sort of lifts you out of the pain body, that creates this sort of freedom from it, because all of a sudden you're looking for the solution. You're not still telling the unhappy story. If you don't want to, you could absolutely take this exact same tactic and make it into blame and shame and criticism. See, you're always doing this and that's a trigger for me, as opposed to like, hey, wait, this is an opportunity for us to work together as a team. This is apparently something that I need, and let's work toward that together. And I will do the same, right? Like, we will work on it as a unit. How amazing and freeing. He says, whenever you get taken over by the pain body, whenever you don't realize it, recognize it for what it is, it becomes part of your ego. Whatever you identify with turns into ego. The pain body is one of the most powerful things the ego can identify with, just as the pain body needs the ego to renew itself through it. That unholy alliance, however, eventually breaks down in those cases where the pain body is so heavy that the egoic mind structures, instead of being strengthened by it, are becoming eroded by the continuous onslaught of the pain body's energy. In the same way that an electronic device can be empowered by an electric current, but also destroyed by it if the voltage is too high. Back to that same concept that people with strong pain bodies often get to that breaking point when their life is becoming unbearable, where they genuinely cannot take any more pain, any more drama. And one person expressed this by saying plainly and simply that she was fed up with being unhappy. Some people may feel, as I did, Eckhart Tolle writes, that they cannot live with themselves anymore. Inner peace then becomes their first priority. Their acute emotional pain forces them to disidentify from the content of their minds in the mental emotional structures that give birth to and perpetuate the unhappy me. I want to finish with the last couple of things that he mentions. On the last two pages of this chapter, he says that it takes no time at all to become free of the pain body. How exciting, right? This whole chapter is so exciting. I feel like I've said that so many times. How empowering. How exciting. No time at all. When the pain body's activated, know that what you're feeling is the pain body in you. This knowing is all that is needed to break your identification with it. And when identification with it ceases, the transmutation begins. The knowing prevents the old emotion from rising up into your head and taking over not only internal dialogue, but also your actions as well as interactions with other people. This means the pain body cannot use you anymore and renew itself through you. The old emotion may then still live in you for a while and come up periodically. It may also still occasionally trick you into identifying with it again and thus obscure the knowing, but not for long. When you feel the pain body, don't fall into the error of thinking there is something wrong with you. Just like what I said at the very beginning of this episode, if you are somebody that is like, man, this is me. I'm having huge emotional reactions to things, or like, I'm just like, I feel like I'm worked up all the time, or just telling myself an unhappy story all the time, or I'm always complaining. I'm just like, why am I operating there? Don't make yourself into a problem. The ego loves that. The knowing needs to be followed by accepting. Anything else will obscure it again. Accepting means that you allow yourself to feel whatever it is you're feeling at that moment. It's part of the isness of the now. You can't argue with what is. Well, you can, but if you do, you suffer. Through allowing, you become what you are. Vast, spacious, you become whole. You are not a fragment anymore, which is how the ego perceives itself. Your true nature emerges, which is one with the nature of God. Jesus points to this when he says, "Be ye whole, even as your Father in heaven is whole." The New Testament's "be ye perfect" is a mistranslation of the original Greek word, which means whole. This is to say, you don't need to become whole, but be what you already are, with or without the pain body. And that's where we'll wrap this episode. One of my favorite aspects of reading this material time and time again is that I truly uncover different parts of myself as I read it every time that I do. I notice different passages, different things stand out to me, and it really is kind of like Eckhart Tolle meets you exactly where you're at. And any time that you pick this book up, no matter how many times you've read it, and I think that might, for me personally, have something to do with the fact that we can so easily go revert back to our childhood and adolescent conditioning, those layers that we think we have to put on, and all the stories that we do tell ourselves about how we're not good enough and we're not enough just as we are. And I love that he ends with that very sentiment that you don't have to change something. Even with your pain body, even with the pain and the baggage that you might be carrying around, you're still whole. You're not broken and destroyed and not no good anymore. You can be working on things and growing as an individual and coming into this more enlightened version of yourself, this more aware version of yourself, where you're no longer controlled by the pain that you've experienced. You're no longer controlled by the identifications, that egoic nature that has been rolled out for you, but the awareness behind it, the presence, and in that way, you really are already whole. You are made in God's image, you know, perfect and whole. And that's actually a beautiful affirmation that I like to say every day, so I'll just add that in there for anybody listening that's like, man, I want something nice to say to myself. It's a really beautiful affirmation to say I'm perfect and whole in the image I was created. I think that this, again, this the ending of this chapter and this part of the book is one big reminder of that. You don't have to be quote unquote perfect in the eyes of what other people have told you that means and all the things that you need to do and the way you need to show up and perform. You are already made that way and you are so worthy of connection. You don't have to work so hard to try to prove that to yourself or to anybody else. And the more you get rid of that concept in your mind and that mindset itself, the closer you get to your truest essence, your most authentic self, the most glowy, joyful, radiant you. And, you know, just get to come back to the realization that, hey, I'm already whole. So thank you all for listening so much. I hope this episode has been heartwarming, enlightening, uplifting for you. If it was, please let me know in whatever way you'd like to do that. Follow me at The Mellow Mama on Instagram, TheMellowMama_ on TikTok. Check out my YouTube channel, a plethora of amazing videos on there, if I do say so myself, from years and years ago. And as my journey has progressed, I look back on those videos and I'm like, gosh, this is exactly how I feel today as a mother. It's all still so relevant and I'm so proud of the work that I've shared on there. And I love that it's a vast free resource for parents, young and old and with young and old children. And I really recommend it. I recommend checking it out, subscribing there, and just getting a little refresher no matter where you're at in your parenting journey, even if you haven't technically started it yet. Lastly, if you're truly inspired by the conscious parenting philosophy, if you know that you want more from the relationships that you're experiencing right now, or that you're going to be building and developing as you become a parent, I really couldn't stress enough that my online course at www.themellowmama.com is a one-stop shop with ever-changing modules and additions. I'm working on so many awesome things right now that I think are going to continue to uplift, encourage, and inspire every person that takes my course, listens to it for the first time, second or third time, and really starts to embark on that journey, the inner work, the more difficult, challenging task that is reparenting ourselves so that we can show up in a way that we're truly proud of for our own families and for our own marriages. Heck, you know, like I've said, I think twice in this episode, parenting is so much about the parent and then about the child, the way that we've taken care of ourselves and our hearts. The image that we have of ourselves affects every aspect of our day with our children and every aspect of our child's ability to develop strong intrinsic self-esteem, how we respond to them, react to them, how we model life for them. If you are wanting a richer, more authentic experience and to feel super confident and grounded in the philosophy that you practice, check out my online course at www.themellowmama.org. Like I said, ever-changing and growing, but really a one-stop shop for all things conscious parenting and reparenting. Like, you can kind of go from start to finish there and start to feel very confident and almost like you can embody this real, I am a conscious parent, and every day I'm growing. Every day that I'm with my children, I am learning. Every day in my marriage, I am learning. I am getting better. I am becoming more present and aware and conscious. It's such a beautiful, empowered feeling. And I truly love hearing from my online course students that they're experiencing that every day. So check that out. I've also got some really exciting new resources coming for you guys. I really can't express my excitement until I can really fully explain what I've got to offer, but it is going to be a game changer for so many of you, especially those of you listening that are like, hey, this is going to be a practice for sure for me. Like, I really need help in this area. I really need better tools for my own emotional regulation. I need some hand-holding. I need somebody to, like, you know, just truly be there with me. I have got you guys, and I'm so excited to share about that. I'm going to be launching that November 1st. Whenever you're listening to this, hopefully it may be already out. So Thank you again. Check out all the resources that I've got, like I said, already available, so many of them for free. And go to my website, www.themellowmama.org, to enroll in my course if that's something that you're like, you know what? That's on my heart. I want to do that. And just thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being here with me, for listening, for applying all the things that I share and talk about. It is my greatest joy and passion in my life to be sharing this information. And not just that, but to be seeing in real time how it is affecting other people and how they are becoming more empowered individuals and taking the information that I'm sharing, taking it upon themselves to explore it more deeply and to truly implement it into their relationships. It seriously makes me so proud of each and every one of you listening. I know that it's not always the most comfortable thing to listen to this stuff and to try to put it into practice and to try to like evaluate yourself and psychoanalyze everything. It can be so exhausting, and you are just doing such an amazing job. And every parent out there is doing such an amazing job and just trying so hard. And my heart is with every single one of you, and I'm so grateful that you're listening and here spending this time with me. I will see you on the next episode.